broadcasting before and probably after the rapture. It's the Drew Marshall Show.
For us here right now from the album Kind of Blue. Feels appropriate now that we're going to be talking to Tony Criz. Tony, the beat poet from Donald Miller's Blue Like Jazz. He's also the author of a new book, Aloof, and Neighbors and Wise Men. Neighbors and Wise Men introduces captivating dialogues and unexpected moments with God that beyond the confines of a conventional religious system and offer the chance for a powerful life transformation. So we got to get to know Tony Criz, known as Tony the Beat Poet, from Donald Miller's Blue Lake Jazz book. Through his real-life conversation experience, we prove that God can and will use anyone and anything, from Muslims to anti-religious academics to post-Christian cultures, to make himself known. Aloof, we've all longed for God to be tangible. Some might say to worship music, others go on missions, others fast from food. The universal quest is to feel the divine, and yet the divine seems aloof, even shy, distant. In his narrative-driven book, Tony Criz leads the reader on a journey of orchestrated epiphanies along the eternal quest to tangibly encounter God, including the unpredictable moments that give us hope, and even more so, the long gaps between those moments that challenge our faith.
Well done, Tim.
Thanks, buddy.
Well done.
Thanks.
Now I can go get drinks of water more often.
You can get drinks that are even stronger.
Did you tell everyone I was gone?
No, I didn't. I didn't want them to know that.
I was so thirsty, I had to get a drink. Anyway, Tony Criz on the phone, TonyCriz.com. Tony, dude, what's going on?
Not much, man. How you doing?
I was thirsty. I had to go get a drink.
What's up?
I've never done that before. Tim, in 13 years, have I ever gotten up, left you to go get a drink?
No, to go get rid of liquid, maybe.
Yes,
not
yes, yes.
To get yeah. liquid ingested.
Anyway, I knew it was Tony. Tony is cool. Tony's one of those guys with a goatee and a woolly hat. He could handle it. You know what I mean?
Nice.
Hey, I have a number of questions for you.
Let's do it.
I want to start with the fact that someone from Japan wrote in and said we should get you on the show. Apparently, you're a big deal over there.
Yeah, I'm huge in Japan, I hear.
Aren't we all? Chuck Waterman from Kumamoto, Japan. Hey, Drew, been reading Neighbors and Wise Men lately by Tony Criz. I think you'd find it interesting, and therefore we'd all find it interesting, to talk with Tony Criz on your show. Have you thought about talking to him? Chuck, this one's for you.
Thanks, Chuck.
So was Tony the Beat Poet your introduction to the world? Before that, nobody cared about you?
Probably on any sort of, public scale. That was, 13 years ago? I can't believe you're still talking about that book.
Well, I can't either, because I still haven't read it. Have you read it, Tim?
Yes, quite enjoyed it.
So, can you, do you actually still do any of this beat poetry stuff? Like, I don't even know what that is, and why does a white guy do it?
No. Okay. I can't tell you how many times I travel around and people ask me to do poetry, and I have to explain to them that Don makes it very clear in Blue Like Jazz that I don't do poetry. He just thinks I look like a beat poet, and that's why he used it.
Oh, okay.
But I don't do beat poetry at all.
Are you talented in any other ways than writing? Because even you're not really a reader, so how does someone who's not really a reader become a writer?
Yeah, it's what I am is I'm a storyteller. I'm both a collector of stories, and I tell stories. And having lived in a lot of spots around the world, there's a lot of stories to be told, and so that's where it came about. I'm as surprised as anybody that I can write.
Well, I remember coming back home from Australia, where I was a pastor for 5 years, and on the flight home, I was reading Messy Spirituality by Yak, and I thought, what a jerk. This guy wrote the book I was going to write. And then I found out about this book called Aloof, and I said to myself, what a jerk. This guy wrote the book that I was going to write.
Go write your version, man. Go write your version. There's no way we can, get into all the things about what it is to try and interact with God, who is so distant often.
Do your sons think you're a cool Portland hipster with a goatee and a scarf and a knit hat, or do they think you're a tool like most sons?
Closer to Tool than Cool.
How old are the boys?
They're 12, 10, and 9.
Wow.
And full of angst.
Wow. Larry, Curly, and Mo, which one of your kids do you love the most?
That's simple, but I can't say it because I don't want to record it. But there's a clear answer.
Really? That's pretty funny. So you're kind of like the Mike Frost of Portland. Do you know Frosty?
No.
Mike Frost is a guy from Sydney, so he's Australian, and he's kind
of... Oh, Michael Frost. Yeah, I know Michael.
Sorry, I should have... Really, you didn't understand Michael Frost? You're funny. So let's get into the aloof with God stuff, right? And your experience with an aloof God, does it all hinge around the three-year-old nephew who got cancer?
Well, that was just the immediate sort of thing that got me writing on the topic, but it's an idea that I think about a lot and been thinking about for years, mostly because I think my biggest problem with religion is the thing that frustrates me the most probably is the pageantry. It's the pretending. And I really think, at least in American Christianity, there's this pandemic of pretending that's going on. We go and we all partake in this religious pageant every Sunday morning, and we, you know, turn on our religious games when we get in a religious context, but we're a very different person elsewhere. And I'm very motivated by honesty and holism in all areas of life, but particularly when we talk about something as profound and important as the Creator.
I have a problem with the lack of tangible interaction, and I think it has to do with the fact that I was set up by my tribe. The tribal conditioning that I went through programmed my brain in such a way that that I should experience some sort of tangible interaction with God, because I read about tangible interactions in the holy in the sacred scriptures. I hear about tangible interactions every time they put someone up on stage and do a testimony.
Exactly.
And yet I got bupkis. And then people push back to me, and they go, you're an idiot. You're either really stupid or really arrogant, because it's either happened and you're just dumb and didn't notice it, or you want more and you're just an arrogant putz.
Yep. I've heard that narrative many, many times, and I think people come by it honestly. I'm not mad at good Christians or religious people who go through the pageant or who feel the frustration, because I think we've all been set up. You know, the worship people all dressed perfectly in their, you know, perfectly pressed shirts and their perfectly coiffed hair and their beautiful faces stand up there behind their perfect instruments and their perfect voices, and they go, God's here, I can feel him all around us, God's touching me, he's walking with me, oh, he's holding my hand, blah, blah, blah. And then the pastor gets up afterwards and goes, that was so beautiful, what was so inspired, the Lord spoke to me this week and told me to bring you this word. And it's like, bullshit. I mean, what the hell are we doing here? Because all of that is just a game. And then poor person sitting in the pew has to go home afterwards after they have their little religious buzz. And they've got to sit in the puddle of their actual existence.
Right.
Where God's not speaking to them and stroking their hair, you know. And they're going, what's going on here? What's wrong with me? So then they learn, oh my gosh, I'm going to be rejected by this thing.
Yeah.
It gives me my identity unless I play along. And so then we all learn to sort of use the same language. And it's absolutely angering. And the thing that's so frustrating about it is we frame the thing based on absolute categorical lies. Like the concept that the Bible is a book full of miracles, right? It's a book full of miracles. Actually, it's not. That's a lie. But one of my Bible profs once said to me, there's only three generations in the entire Bible who could say that God miraculously showing up happened as a normative reality. Everybody else, when God shows up, they're like freaked out because it's so freaking weird. But they're like, what the heck just happened? Because we've never seen this before. It's only Moses, Elijah and Elisha, and then Jesus and his immediate followers.
Right.
So many times. And even the book of Acts, that a lot of people want to call a book of miracles, once you get to about chapter 13, the miracles and God showing up disappear. Like, it's basically every chapter for the first half. And in the second half of the book, there's almost nothing. Just people going about their business, trying to be faithful, trying to share the word, praying for each other. but there's not a whole bunch of, like, you know, woo-woo-woo, God showing up stuff going on. So I just think we need to start to get honest about these things so people can begin to have a real, authentic relationship with God.
We are on the phone with Tony Kriz. Tony, the beat poet from Donald Miller's Blue Leg Jazz, author of Aloof and Neighbors and Wise Men, and his website is tonykriz.com. Tony, do you know anything about our show? Do you know that we're actually on real radio and it's not a podcast?
Yeah, I think I knew that. Okay. I went to your website.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that you realize that in Canada there's some rules for radio and what we can and cannot say.
I take your cautionary tale, and I will do better.
I'd like to apologize to all of our homeschooling audience out there. I want to know if how close have you come to breaking up with God? Or divorcing Jesus?
Oh, we've had a few seasons of where we weren't on speaking terms.
Mm-hmm. What does that look like in your life? And why, you know, I'm sure if you've had a few seasons, you've had a chance to go back over it and see how that happened, how it developed. I'm sure when you sat down with the counselor was able to map back to you the patterns of silliness. So how what are the patterns, man?
Well, I think the pattern I believe that for a belief to be really worthwhile, to be a true belief, you have to be willing to push it to the point where you might just fall off the cliff in the process. Mm-hmm. A belief's not worth anything if it's just an idea we hold in our head and not something that we actually try to embody. And so I think I've pushed my beliefs several times to the point where I almost fell off the cliff. And though those were the most painful seasons of my life at the time, desperately hurtful, full of failure and doubt, and when I look back now on those seasons, I'm filled with immense compassion and gratitude and thanks to God. That God would love me enough to bestow upon me that level of reality and drama so that I could kind of sort of come to the end of my broken beliefs and have those replaced by things that felt a lot more real.
Tony, what's wrong with the Jesus people in Oregon? Like, is it secondhand pot? Like, what is it that is that you guys seem to have a thing about you? You got a style, you got a verbiage, you got a... You, Tim, do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, I'd love to be in Oregon.
Oregon. You're a meathead. No, seriously, do you not think there's a vibe with that gang out there?
It's that whole west coast of the United States, including Canada.
That means that the culture has impacted the Jesus people to the point where they've watered down the gospel and now they don't...
Maybe they've distilled the water out of the gospel.
You just always go back to drinking, don't you?
I do. Excuse me, I need to go get a drink now.
What is it with you Jesus people on the West Coast, man?
Well, you know, here in Portland, I live right in the heart of the city. I live in a communal household that's three metro stops from the downtown. You know, most of my neighbors have never gone to church. And some sociologists say that Portland is the first post-Christian city in the United States. So I think there's two elements going on. One is there's this, you know, coonskin cap frontier spirit that still sort of saturates the culture out here. The don't tell me what to think, don't tell me what to believe, don't tell me what to do. I'm in charge of my own life. So there's that piece of it that allows for venturing beyond sort of the typical rote ways of thinking. You couple that with the fact that the church is lost. The church is lost out here. We've lost the game. We officially lost the game. The scoreboard says the secular team won. And
Mark Driscoll lost.
And Mark Driscoll lost. And I think that's a tremendous gift to the people of Jesus. to have the arrogance that we're the winning team, that we sort of dictate the terms of interaction, that you have to play by our rules, you have to come to our things, you have to come to our meetings, and we're going to do it our way and our language and our voice and the thing that makes us feel all warm and fuzzy. You have to come and play by our rules. I mean, we can't do that out here anymore. We have to realize we actually have to put on flesh and blood and move into the neighborhood, as Eugene Peterson, when he translated John 1:14. we need to move into the neighborhood. We need to actually embody our place and time and actually take on the voice of our actual neighbors in full faith and absolute dedication to the God who created all things and Jesus who died on the cross to save all of our sins. In the midst of that, to actually be neighborly, actually be truly missional. Yeah. Missional always means you take on the dress and the voice of the place that you live.
Okay, so this is a lovely segue into Neighbors and Wise Men. And the website is Tony Criz, T-O-N-Y, in case you don't know how to spell Tony. Criz, K-R-I-Z, as we say up here, .com. Tony, how do you sell Jesus? Give us some of your shtick.
How do I sell Jesus?
Yeah. Well, when someone finally, you know, says to you, Tony, what have you got? I want what you have. What have you got that I don't? You know, that moment, that tender moment when they say that to you.
That never happens.
That never happens.
So I'm a public person. I live in coffee shops and pubs around the city. That's where I do my work as a writer and a filmmaker. And I'm in five conversations with strangers a day, just living out and about. And it takes about 2 minutes per conversation to get around to faith. This whole idea that it's hard to talk about your faith is baffling to me. And the funny thing is, living in a post-Christian city, 10 years ago, I was like a lot of cool guy Christians. I was trying to find really hip ways to talk about my faith so I sounded cool, so I didn't sound like some religious guy, you know? Like talk about, you know, I'm a follower of the Jesus way and Jesus is my guru or whatever. And you know what? There's no angst in this city anymore about the church. Nobody's freaked out by the church. Nobody thinks the church is a bully here. So we don't have to play those games. So I just call myself a Christian. It's the easiest term to use to get immediately to who I am and to begin the conversation. Now, once we get that word out on the table, some unpacking needs to happen as to what do I mean by that term. But I just refer to myself as a Christian. And they're like, well, let's talk about that. And I talk about Jesus. I talk about Jesus' model of a life that is affecting everything that I do. It's why I live in a communal household with homeless people. And it's a multicultural household. We have two Navajo that live in our household. That's why I live that way. It's why I walk instead of driving a car. It affects every part of my life. It affects my, you know, why I eat what I eat and why I choose not to drive and why I choose not to spend money in ways that other people do. It affects everything. And it affects my destiny as a spiritual person. It means that I'm practicing now the way that I believe I'm going to live in eternity, which is holding hands, metaphorically, with God and trying to live by God's values.
Lay on us a little more of this communal household thing, because that doesn't interest me.
It doesn't?
No.
I have enough trouble with the dog in the house.
Say that again, Tony, what?
But you want to talk about it. It doesn't interest you, but you want to talk about it.
No, well, it doesn't interest me in the fact that I may want to do it one day. Except maybe when I'm on the Camino Trail and have to live communally, but
oh, man, so good. Yeah, you know, it's a decision that happened soon after my wife and I buy our first house. It was a cruddy house, man. It was 1,600 square feet, and it was a borderline double wide, but it had a couple extra bedrooms in it, little tiny bedrooms. And my wife and I were just one day we were just discussing that you know, we really are addicted to space. We love a lot of space. And it's really an unjustifiable addiction based on humanity globally and throughout history. You know, that a family at the time, a family of three, would live in 1,600 square feet is just, it's undefendable. It's pornographically opulent to live in that much space. And so we just sort of went, well, you know, let's we don't have to do a big campaign. Let's just decide in our hearts that we're going to be open to other people joining us in our space. And, you know, before long, three people moved in, and we've been living that way for about 12 years now, and had about 40 people come through our house. They stay on average about a year and a half. Mostly they come in some state of pain or transition, a lot of existential doubt, but sometimes physical stuff, like when people come off the streets and they just need a place to, you know, kind of get their stuff together and feel safe and feel warm for a year of their life so they can kind of put the pieces back together.
Gee, you know what? And, you're as irresponsible as those missionaries that go in the middle of dangerous areas with their children.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, probably. People say that. I say to those people, safety is an illusion.
Write that one down,
Tim. You live in a suburban house. You got a two-car garage.
Safety is an illusion.
You put the garage down, and then you walk into your house so you don't actually have to see your neighbors, and you hide in your backyard with your big, tall fence. Doesn't mean you're safe. Doesn't mean you're safe. And it brings to bear, really, what is our definition of provision? And who is our provider? If you believe your provision is your tall fence and your alarm system and your full bank account and your 401k, if that's really who your provision is and that's your God, and I don't think that's what Jesus is calling us to.
When was the last time someone wrote you with some sort of vitriolic stuff?
Often. About every time I publish in Christianity Today.
Oh, yeah.
I get something.
How do you keep getting published in Christianity Today is what I want to know.
Yeah, I had a monthly column with them for about 3 years.
Wow.
And, yeah.
You know what, this is the comment that I don't like from people because it's a cheap shot. It's an uneducated cheap shot. And they say to me sometimes, yeah. Oh, Drew, you're just, yeah, we know Drew. Yeah, he causes trouble for the sake of causing trouble. That drives me nuts. You have no idea how intentional my trouble is.
Yeah, man. And it's just sort of like, go back and read the Gospels again. There's a lot of catalytic language going on in the Gospels where Jesus is throwing a catalyst into the very clean system just to see what sparks. Because I think real engagement and epiphanies happen. Epiphanies happen when we're off balance. Epiphanies never happen when we're square on 2 feet. And I agree, I've used some pretty straight talk on your show today. And I don't apologize for it, except for I wish I would have taken back my one word. But because it's, where are we going to grow? Where are we going to learn to trust each other? Well, why is relationship based on ease and comfort? Does that sound like the gospel? It doesn't to me. And transformational commitment to one another happens when we let each other say what we need to say, how we need to say it in the moment. And stop playing church foyer all the time.
Yeah.
Hello, brother. Good to see you. God bless you today. Where is that? What's going to happen there?
Well, you know what God says? Love your enemies.
Thank you.
I guess that way we're not full of it anymore.
No,
afterwards.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Well,
you, I don't know. You're an anomaly, and I'm sure people have used that word before. And, I'm going to admit something on air here, which is a little embarrassing, but I got you on the show because a listener said, get you on the show. And I didn't know about you until our listener said, get you on the show. And then when I knew about you, I saw that you'd written some stuff that I really should read, and I haven't read yet. I haven't read your books before I got you on the show. It's like when Paul Young asked me to endorse The Shack. I said, maybe I should read it first.
Yeah. Paul's a really good friend of mine, by the way.
Ah, that figures. He's in South Africa right now.
I know.
I was going to get him on the show to represent Tribe Jesus, but we switched gears and we went Tribe Buddhism today with Uma Thurman's dad, Robert. Do you know Bob Thurman? Have you heard of that name? He's a big Buddhist guy.
Nope.
He's heard of Uma Thurman, I'm sure.
Have you heard of him? Yes, I'm sure you have. Dude, I really wish you the best, and God bless you.
Thanks. Thanks, I really appreciate that. And God bless you. May the cockles of your heart be warm.
Oh, you are a funny cat. I wish you lived closer, man. We could just cause some horrible trouble in the name of the Lord.
Well, get out here, man. I've got a bed for you. Get out here. Hang out with us for a while.
I've heard they're kind of like that out there in the left coast. Yeah. I care about you deeply. Thank you very much. We should get you back on the show. Next time you're selling something, let us know, okay? Thanks, man.
All right. Sir. Bye.
Right. Tony Kriz. That's the website. Tony Kriz. TonyKriz. KRIZ. A short break. We'll be right back.